Howdy, folks. This is Big Kev, your most excellent host of the Roots Rock Revolution. And you lucky folks, you're listening to KPFT Houston 90.1 FM HD1. Check us out. You'll love it.
It is 6 p.m. Wednesday, and it's time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and you're going to find it only here on Houston's community station, listener-sponsored KPFT. I am Hank Rubicek, producer of this award-winning show, and every week we place the spotlight on ordinary people with extraordinary stories to tell. Well, it creates tension, it launches the plot, and it evokes the theme. We're talking about conflict, because without it, there is no story. To understand what's interesting about a story, then you got to keep your eye out for what the characters want, and then what gets in the way of it. And conflict isn't the same as combat. It could be, but usually it takes the form of something internal, a conflict within yourself. Well, I've got five students that I ambushed them for my storytelling course to help demonstrate what internal conflict is by delivering one of their stories. Now, each of these young people have come a long way from being storytelling greenhorns to almost old hands. They are Trey Worrell, Jessica Solis, Isela Mendoza, Andriel Magual, and Victor Calvin. We're going to start with Isela. Isela, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
How are you? Great. Now, you're interested in public relations. Tell the world a little bit about you. You're interested in PR, right?
Yes. It basically started when I was working with my aunt who works for a production team, and we kind of went around Houston hosting these events for big marketers, and I enjoyed the community of it all. It was amazing to be in community and in the environment with so many great artists and people.
Great. That's wonderful. That's a really articulate response. Most people don't have that kind of a response. That means that you've learned something, you've had brilliant professors, especially in courses like storytelling, and you are going to do really well. Well, Isela, your story is about the problem of bullying from someone that we wouldn't really expect. Tell us the story.
Of course. My mother absolutely hates bullies. She was fortunate enough to go to high school with her favorite cousin. And at the time, her cousin was described as being a really thin, skinny, fragile woman that she couldn't even hurt flies. As you might expect, she couldn't even hurt the girls that would pick on her. However, my mother was the complete opposite. When it came to family, and including bullying, that was a no-go for her. So she would help my aunt fight her battles, she literally would. She would grab these girls in bunches and rough them up and make them regret ever messing with the two of them. Time would pass by, and I'm sitting in the car next to my aunt, who's now happily married with her husband, in the passenger seat, sitting next to my mom behind the steering wheel. We were in traffic for a good couple of minutes, and all of a sudden, we started to hear a lot of commotion in the car in front of us. These group of people were hollering and screaming at everyone, saying how stupid we all were and how we didn't know how to drive. So my uncle decided to stick his head out of the window and yell back in annoyance, saying, you know, calm down. Everything's going to be fine. There are children around. We'll get through it eventually. But they didn't like that one bit. So one by one, these intimidating guys start popping out of their vehicle and making their way toward my uncle. And at this point, he's already stepped out of the car and he's defending himself from all the profanity they were throwing his way. And my mother quickly looked over, almost anticipating what was about to happen. So she knew she had to do something about it. She quickly unbuckled her seatbelt, jumped out of the car, and angrily stomped her way toward this commotion. I remember thinking how this average, slender, 5'4" average high woman was showing 0 ounce of fear going towards these cocky, tall, rough looking guys. And it only takes a couple of seconds until she starts grabbing them by the hair and the t-shirt and the collar and jabbing them here and there and giving them a good punch in this cheek and that shoulder and that stomach. And it's as if they automatically knew that all their strength combined were in the force of her punches. So they quickly backed away. I would then always hear stories from families and friends discussing how my mother has helped them so much. And it would go a little something like, "Your mother was always there. She would pop up randomly when someone was trying to take my lunch money or something and really give them a good rough up. And, you know, your mother, she just really hated bullies."
Wow. Your mom's a badass. You know, I mean, that's what she is. There's no other word to describe her. You know, these little people who walk around in life and we look at them and we say, okay, I'm walking away. I'm already doing a bad thing, but the worst thing I can do is hassle with this person. And that's a great thing. Your mom is not passive and compliant. And that's what people are when they sometimes really see bullies, right? And that's great. And we have to do something about them because bullies take away our dignity. They do everything they can to destroy us, right? What'd you learn about bullying from your mom?
I learned that no matter how small I might have felt or how these bullies might have tried to dim my light, if this woman could do it with zero fear, then I could too. There was something in me that could stand up for myself as she did.
Right. Yeah. That's great. Well, you know, we really do learn to somehow stand up for ourselves. But, you know, bullying is about really standing up for someone else. And that is even more powerful. And I think that's what your mom did. And that's pretty magnificent. Victor, have you ever been bullied?
Oh, yeah. My middle school was rough. And I would have definitely wanted Isela's mom there to back me up.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, what school did you go to?
I went to Hogg Middle School. It was a pretty rough.
Okay, in the Heights. School. Yeah, okay. I know that school well. That's rough. It's a rough school.
Well, it was back when I was there back in like the 2000s, 2000.
Oh, yeah, because you're an older guy. You're an older guy. You were back there in 2000. Well, Victor Galvez is interested in communication, but he's also interested in education. Victor, how do you see a connection between communication and education? It's pretty obvious, but what's your take on that?
For me, I think communication goes a long way. Some of the mentors in my life were teachers, a good chunk of them. So I think they play a big part in shaping us.
Right.
So I think I would like to return the favor as some of my teachers did for me.
Beautiful thought. Thank you, Victor. You know, the opening to your story is pretty strong, and I think that we're going to just jump right into it. So let's tell us your story.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes sisters will share dolls, blankets, toys, anything that can demonstrate their affection to one another. But most sisters won't turn to one another and say, "Hey, do you want my kid?" Now, that wasn't the case with my mom, or at least I don't think it was. Her name is written on my birth certificate, I promise. But that is what she told my aunt. I'm not exactly sure why she had told me, but I remember being a kid at the time, and we were sitting in her bedroom. Maybe I had asked why my aunt didn't have any kids, but this is the story she had told me. I was about 9 or 10 years old when I heard your aunt crying to your grandma. Your aunt was asking your grandma, Why do all of my sisters come out of the hospital with kids? But every time I come out empty-handed. Your aunt had been trying for kids, but unfortunately couldn't have any. I felt bad for my sister, especially knowing that she wanted to have kids of her own, to love and tend to, and give all her affection. With the innocence of a child that I had at the time, I had an idea that that could cheer her up. I approached her and told her that when I grow up and had kids, I would give her my first one. All she did was smile, tear up, and gave me a hug. I'm sure it made her feel better. Well, when time finally passed and I met your dad, and the time finally came that you were born, she looked at you and asked me, "Is this one for me?" Maybe she was teasing, or maybe she meant it. But I was so attached to you that I had forgotten what I told her back then. All I could tell her was, "He's my first one." She smiled, nodded. She probably understood that it wouldn't be that easy. What else could she have done? Thinking back to what I had told her, I said, "Can I give you my second one?" When the next pregnancy came, I didn't expect to have a girl. She approached me again. This time, the answer was different. "It's my first girl." By now, I think we both knew I couldn't actually give any of you away. Instead, I had another idea. I looked at her and said, "What if I share them with you?" Now, I don't know if my mom meant it or not whenever she told my aunt that she would give one of us away to her. Maybe she did when she was a kid. After all, she was just a child wanting to comfort her sister in a dark time. But my mom definitely shared us with my aunt. My aunt was always around us to support us, care for us, and always thought about us everywhere she went. I remember she used to work at a pocket pie factory, you know, the ones that look like empanadas. She would stop by every day after work to see us. She would always bring us a box of our favorite flavors, cherry and chocolate. She even brought some apple ones for my mom. Those were her favorite. My aunt was also the one that introduced me to my favorite doctor, Dr. Pepper. Whenever she went out shopping, she would usually bring us back a toy or a piece of clothing for us. Although we've grown up and can buy our own stuff now, she still gets us something small, like socks or a t-shirt with our favorite band. Something that says, "I thought about you." Most people have a mom in their lives. Some people don't get that privilege. If you're lucky, you get one that showers you with lots of hugs, love, and affection. In my case, I was blessed enough to have a second one, my aunt.
That is such a beautiful story, Victor. It really is. That's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story and very poignant. That being said, all stories have lessons in them. There's a bunch of lessons in every story, whether we know it or not. What is the one single lesson? What do you want us to learn? What do you want us to take away from this story?
There was a verse in a song that inspired me that says, "If you admire someone, you should go ahead and tell them, because people never get the flowers while they can still smell them." For me, my aunt is someone that I haven't shown much admiration towards, even though she deserves it. And I wanted to show that admiration through this story.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. What's the song? Do you remember the song?
I believe it's Big Brother.
Yeah. Wow. People love flowers, but they don't get a chance to smell them. Yeah. That's not the exact wording. That is so beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Victor. Thanks so much. Trey Worrell, well, you're a film guy. And he's kind of interesting because he's a little bit different from all the rest as far as his interests are concerned. He's not a raw communication major, but he's interested in film. Now, we're going to play a little game, all right? I'm going to give you a famous line from a film. You tell me what film.
Okay.
Right? I'm going to be easy on you. Right? You ready?
Ready.
Go ahead and make my day.
Die Hard 5.
Where?
I'm not sure where that one's from.
Dirty Harry. Clint Eastwood. All right, how about this one? This one's even easier. I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Oh, I'm going to have to go with Incredibles 2.
Change your major.
Oh.
The Godfather.
Dang.
Tell us how you got interested in film.
Well, ever since I was a kid, I always loved like just watching cartoons and watching the different shows, and
right.
I just got into the production aspect of it, like
right.
more about it. It's so interesting to me, and
yeah,
everything about it.
Well, yeah, those are two movies you missed, obviously. Look, don't get on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and try to figure this stuff out. Stay on track with film production and you're going to be great. Okay, now, your lesson is clearly embedded in your story. It really is. Your lesson is a little more explicit, and it's a different kind of conflict. And don't forget, I want to remind our listeners, we're talking about different kinds of conflict, which is important because there's something in a story called an arc, which is, what is the problem? How do we figure it out? And yours is pretty explicit, which makes it interesting and also a little refreshing in a way. So go ahead and tell us your story.
Sure thing. When I wasn't a very good child when I was younger. When I was growing up, I had roughly two chores to do. Keep the house clean and take out the trash. And when I say house, I mean like a small two-bedroom apartment in New York. So not very much square footage. And I would hardly do those chores. I would always grumble, roll my eyes, suck my teeth, you know, the usual. And one day that kind of got to my dad, and he decided he wanted to talk to me about it. So he pulled me to the side and told me the story about when he was younger. He told me that when he was my age, his father was absent and his mother might as well have been. He had to earn money by going to the golf course with his little brothers and caddying for people, which is like carrying their bags around the course. As long as they were willing to pay, he'd do it. And he would buy things like his toothpaste, his toothbrushes, soap to take showers in, school clothes, school supplies, just to make sure his little brothers and him got to school. And then he told me that even by the age of 16, he was already driving and doing what he had to do all about. And when he told me this, my entire viewpoint on who he was, what he meant to me, changed. It wasn't a father who worked hard all the time. It was someone with so much drive that, honestly, it's scary. He changed the way I see him, and it changed from a sort of fear to a more admiration. And you know, now all I hope to do is be like him, or even better.
Yeah, that is so great. You know, one of the things that I know I've heard the story before, but one of the things that you said that I didn't realize the first time around is that your father was absent and your mother should have been, or might as well have been, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did your father ever tell you what that meant?
He elaborated every once in a while.
Yeah. So, yeah, okay. But his mom wasn't around either, really, kind of, sort of. I mean, they didn't spend a lot of time together. They didn't have a lot of conversations together. My guess is that if he had any kind of problem, that she wasn't really there to listen to him either.
No.
I find that fascinating because your dad was smart enough, nice enough, and a good dad enough to tell you this story, right? Which is really the antithesis of his mom and dad. So I'm not pointing out anything that's really profound, but I think it's important to know that. When do you plan on telling your father this story? I know you haven't, but when do you plan on telling him this story? Because this is really a gem. It's a treasure. You know that.
My wedding day. Wedding.
Okay.
Whenever we get to this.
But you're not getting married tomorrow or next week, I would imagine.
No, no,
No.
Zach.
You have a fiance?
No.
You have a girlfriend?
No.
So essentially, you're never going to tell the story to your dad, right? Is that what you're saying to me? You might want to think about something a little more defined. I understand, because I understand that on a wedding day, that is such a fabulous trajectory in your life. It's a special day, right? And if you were giving a toast, I could imagine using this for a toast, right? I
Yeah.
mean, it would be great. It would be great. So I buy it. I see it. I'm not going to tell you what to do, but there's a lot of Father's Days coming around like every year. So you might just want to chew on the fact that unless you get married in the next few years, I wouldn't wait 24 years for your wedding day before telling him. Share that with him earlier. How's that? All right, I have a few questions for you guys, and we're going to take a break in just a moment. We're going to get to Andrea and Jessica, but what one thing that many people realize when they tell stories or they learn about storytelling is that there's always a surprise. Like, for example, my God, I didn't realize this, or I didn't know this was that hard, or I didn't know this was that easy, or I didn't know I had it in me, or I didn't even think about that, those kind of things. So I just want to get a sense, is there anything that surprised you about learning storytelling? And if nothing surprises you, don't worry about it. Say, no, not really, but just curious, curious. Jessica, what about you? You want to unmute yourself and give us your insight.
Yeah, one thing that I took personal about learning how to storytell is to not have trepidation. That's one thing you taught me. Really own your story and be confident.
Thank you. Yeah, well, owning your story is important. When you own your story, you realize one basic thing. It's not going to sound very provocative, but the idea is that when I tell a story, nobody else can do it. And that's what we mean by owning it. Does that make any sense? Nobody else can tell the story. Like we've heard a few stories so far. Now, if Isela or Victor or Trey, and I know this is also going to be true for our next two tellers, Andrea and Jessica, if you wrote your stories out, I mean verbatim, if you wrote them out and you gave that story in written form to all of us and we read it, I guarantee it would not be as effective as you telling it, right? It just wouldn't be. It doesn't make any difference about our skill set. It doesn't make any difference that I've told stories most of my life. If you give me Victor's script, for example, there is no way that I can tell the story that he just told in a way that would be as effective, that would be as evocative. You wouldn't evoke a response because he owns the story, and that's what's happening so far. Trey owns his story. Isela owns her story. Jessica and Andrea, as you'll find out in just a few minutes, own their stories. And that's what one of the things that really makes sort of a novice storyteller a little bit more seasoned. Who was the storyteller in your home growing up? Any of you have a storyteller in your home, parent, grandparent, anybody? Trey, what about you?
Yeah, my mom was a storyteller.
Yeah.
She's probably told us the same.
What kind of stories did she tell you?
Just stories about her past.
Yeah.
Sometimes it feels like she made it up.
You think she made them up, or you think she had a weird past?
Why not both?
Why not both? There you go. I love that. Think about becoming a diplomat. Okay, that would be good too, as long, along with your film career. All right, Victor, how about you? You have a storyteller growing up?
Yeah, I almost want to say that like everybody was a storyteller. My dad would have his own fair share of stories of his childhood, his upbringing, my mom of hers and her family, how like they had their get-togethers or her time in high school. My grandma most recently, the last time I went to go visit her, she was also telling me some of her stories about how her connection with her dad was. They apparently had a really close relationship.
Yeah,
So
loving.
it's just very interesting to me how much more you can get to know a person through their stories and what they tell, despite how long you've already known them. So
Sure.
it just shows you a different light for them.
Yeah. And of course, since everybody's a natural storyteller, it would make sense that everybody has some kind of input. Andrea, how about you? Who was a storyteller in your home growing up?
Actually, it's my little sister. The way she tells,
Really? Wow.
The way she tells things, even though she might have less life experience, she makes everything sound exciting and fun.
You know, I hadn't thought about that. That's really a good point. You know, whenever I ask this question, almost always someone gives me someone older than they are, right? Because of the wisdom and the knowledge and the experience. But you offer a really good point, and that is that her stories are fresh, they're exciting. And in large part, it's because she hasn't had all that experience. So she uses her imagination, I would imagine, to really accentuate them. Albert Einstein always said that creativity is more important than knowledge. I think your little sister is an example of that. That's great. Yeah. And of course, and that's why we want to be teachers, right? If we want to be middle school teachers or elementary school teachers, at least in the good old days, if you ask people, why do you want to be a teacher? Many of them will say, well, because their minds are fresh, because they're creative, because they're active, right? They're energetic. So that makes great sense. Thank you. Jessica, what about you? Storyteller growing up?
Yeah, I would have to say definitely my paternal grandfather. He loved telling stories about his childhood and growing up. He was in a band called Little Tommy and the Rhythm Knights. So he told a lot of stories about that and being a Marine in Vietnam. So we got a whole variety of stories from him.
So he was a rocker? Is that what you're telling? He was a rock and roll? Is that what he's known
No,
for?
it was back. In the olden days, let's say, and
Now,
it was
when
in
you say
summer.
olden days, just make sure. What do you mean by olden days? Be careful here.
Well, yeah, I do have to take it easy there.
Yeah, you do. You do.
I
Now,
would
what do you
say
mean by olden days? What do you mean by olden days? Yes, I'm putting you on the spot. You're right.
yeah,
But
you really are.
this is a lot of fun for me. This is why I live. So tell me, what do you mean by olden days?
Well, I would say maybe back in the 50s, growing up.
Okay, that was very, very well done. It probably really wasn't the 50s. You're just saying that to make me feel better. That's good. I love that. Yeah, you guys are learning. You guys are learning. That's great. So he was a rocker, and he was also in the Marines, and that is, you know, that's a great combination. The experiences have to be remarkable, really, right? Did he have any groupies when he was in a rock band? You know, a lot of wonderful little girls following him all over the place in a van. Oh, he's so wonderful, you know, every
I
day.
would have to say, at that time, my grandmother was his probably biggest groupie.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, why not, right? And obviously it worked because
Here I am.
she was his groupie for a long time. Isela, what about you? Storyteller grown up?
Yes, my grandmother, she loves to share stories about how she grew up in Mexico and in her house and her farm, and she would share a lot of stories about her parents and like Victor said, her and her father had a great relationship, so
Yeah.
it's a
Yeah.
lot of imagery, and it's just so colorful the way that she describes the animals and how excited they would get when it would rain and they would frolic and jump up and down. So yeah, she's a great
Yeah, she
storyteller.
sounds like a romantic in many ways, right? She
Yes,
romanticized,
she
and
is.
that's wonderful. Yeah, that's a romantic. My grandmother was like that. Everything was romantic. You know, she loved soap operas. She cried at everything. She'd get a little twig in the backyard, a little daisy, a weed, and she'd make it into a beautiful bouquet. I don't know. Yeah, these romantic people. Yeah. You gotta have them. You gotta love them. It's why we have Valentine's Day. It's why our hearts drop when we think about these wonderful stories. One more question for you guys before we take a quick break and do some announcements. You know, when someone says to you, "I'd like to tell stories about my life, but I'm boring," right? What do you tell them, Lisella? What do you tell someone who would say, "I'd like to tell stories, but I'm boring"?
Well, I'd have to say that's a lie. You're not boring. There's always something interesting going on. Even waking up and seeing a bird or brushing your teeth or splashing some water on your face and coming to realize something. There's always something to look forward to in your life. So it's
Well, that's good. That's a good point. And even those little incidental routine tasks that we engage in every day are stories in and of themselves many times, right? Trey, what about you? I'm really boring. So what do you tell that person?
I had a professor once, Dr. Rubicek. He said that everyone has a story to tell.
Yeah. You know, when you find people like that, they're astonishing, aren't they? People like that. You know, I mean, when they tell you things like that, I don't know what else to say. I'm in tears. I'm in tears because that is such
it was amazing, profound. Movie,
right. However, you need to see more movies. But other than that, that was a great, great, great line because frankly, and I appreciate the sentiments. I know you're joking around, but you know, the idea is that everybody is a storyteller. They are. And it's a theory, but there's nothing more practical than a good theory because we do put things in story form far more often than we think. Andrea?
Even if you think you don't have a story, a lot of these stories have been from the perspective of other people. Think of it as an excuse to go talk to someone else and hear their own story. Hey. And you can reach your own one.
Yeah, I love that. Think of it as an excuse. Because, you know, we want to talk to people. We want to have something to say. We certainly want to validate our lives. And stories force us to do it in a good way. Victor, what do you tell people?
Similar to how Isela said and Andrea, I think everybody had experiences, unique experiences of their own, whether it be meeting somebody, whether it be learning something, whether it be something they overcame, mm-hmm. there's always something that happens that maybe at first sight or first glance, we think nothing's going on in our lives, but we really do have a lot. And telling stories or putting into story formats for others or even for yourself just really validates that and how important it really is.
That's a great point. Another point about validation, but also you made a very good point about, you know, problems, little problems that we had to solve. And sometimes just looking for these issues that we had to solve, no matter how minor they may be. Like, do I buy shoes with laces or not? I don't know. Sounds ridiculous, right? But I have a story about that. You know, I bought a shoe with laces. I pulled my back out and I swore I was never going to buy them again. And I haven't. Okay. Sounds ridiculous, but there's a story about that because you elongate it. I walk into a store excited about buying my new sneaks, right? I put them on. I bend down. I tie the laces. I can't get up. I just ruin my back. Is it because I'm old or because these shoes are speaking to me? I mean, there's all sorts of things that we can do in order to make those stories happen. Good point. Jessica, how about you?
My approach would be kind of lighthearted. Oh, come on now. You know, I don't believe for one second you're boring. I would encourage them to know everyone has their own unique way of telling a story. And just say, give it a shot and see what magic unfolds.
Great advice. All of you. A little different. You're all inextricably related. I love it. Now, your daughter, of course, has said, added on this class. Tell our listeners her name and a little bit about her.
Yeah, so my daughter's name is Leslie. Mm-hmm. She's in third grade, but she's
been... You wouldn't know it, everybody. You would not know it, listening to this young lady speak. I mean, you wouldn't know it. Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it's fine. She was able to sit in on a few of our classes. So, yeah, she really enjoyed that.
Oh, she's wonderful. All right, let's tell everybody who we are. This is Hank Rubicek, and you are listening to So What's Your Story with my guest storytellers, Andrea Magual. I'm sure that I'm mispronouncing that, but I've been working on it. She'll correct me in a few minutes. Victor Galvin, Jessica Solis, Trey Worrell, and Isela Mendoza on KPFT Houston, 90.1 FM on the dial, and kpft.org, any place on the planet. Also, 89.5 for our friends in Galveston and 89.7 in Huntsville. You know, Quick shout out to our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. We have a swap the fourth Tuesday of the month. It's virtual, so anybody in the world can really kind of chime in. We've certainly had people from all over the country. And it's wonderful because the link is on the Storyteller site, which is HoustonStorytellers.org under events. The same link is there each month. And anybody, and I'm talking to my student tellers right now, you can chime in the fourth Tuesday of the month, not the last Tuesday of the month. Fourth Tuesday isn't always the last, from 7 to 8:30 Central Time. Some of the nicest people you'll ever learn from, and really, really comfortable. So again, that's HoustonStorytellers.org. The idea of maybe cranking up your story a little bit more, your storytelling skills, sometimes we want to get into that. Know that there are a lot of platforms in learning how to tell stories. Our state, Texas, has one of the best storytelling associations in the nation, and that's no hyperbole. They really are. You can crank up your storytelling skill by joining the Tejas Storytelling Association, TejasStorytelling.com. That's right. And also the National Storytelling Network. So again, excuse my voice, that these storytelling associations are there for you to help you nurture or cultivate these storytelling skills, because, you know, 'twas the night after Christmas with nothing to do. So gather the family and tell a story or two. Never said I was a poet, but I thought I would throw that in there. Andrea Mugwal, your story is inventive and fun. I mean, really. And I like to call it the House of Cards. No one should know what that means, but they will immediately, which makes it so spectacular. Tell us your story.
All right. Card game rules are imperceptible to an amateur. I myself play a lot, maybe too many card games, Magic the Gathering, Pokemon. But if you were to ask me, how do you play poker? The only thing I could say is that I don't have the face for it. This is why I've decided to take a page out of chess's book. Chess has enamored people for decades and years because of the story it tells. Anyone can understand a disposable pawn or a rampaging queen, which is why I would like to introduce my deck for the Bushy Road Championship Fest that I fought in last month as Hamsters with Art Supplies. Each of the cards in my deck is represented by a little hamster who has an art supply like a marker or a pencil cannon they use to smite foes. In the first round of this championship tournament, I was facing off against the bejeweled knights. Knights shiny and so trained that their hits that they can hit for more damage than anyone else. I was a little nervous. I had avoided championships like these for such a long time because I didn't feel very good at it. I would be surrounded by competent people, competent men. But luck had turned my side when on my first turn of the game, I pulled a card that let me hit for 2 damage instead of 1. With 6 damage being the end all, I was 1/3 of the way to beating my opponent. And then, next turn, my opponent, with his knights, hit me for 4 damage, doubling what my last attack was, making it look like almost nothing. I thought for sure I was going to die before 5 minutes was up in the round. But in my hand, I held a card to guard my hamsters on the battlefield. The Cable Sheep. I would imagine a bejeweled knight running, charging towards my small little hamsters. And the Cable Sheep jumping in the way, the sword sinking into deep, soft wool until no damage could be met. I had survived. It was time for my last turn. On a good final turn, hamsters fill up the battlefield, some popping out from the bottom of my deck, if I position them right. Did I position them right? I started to doubt myself. Nervous, I looked at my opponent. Hey, could I do that again? He simply nodded, which is something he didn't have to do, but I did. I fixed the bottom of my deck. Shook my head. No, I did it right the first time. I had to. Hey, could I? My opponent nodded. Again, another act of courtesy. And through my nervousness, I was able to see he mirrored it too. He wanted to win just as much as I did, but he shook as if he wasn't the threat. I was. It was almost a blur as I swung my hamster's full swing. And it's not like he had a cable sheep in his hand. He wasn't able to guard or stop my flurry of attacks. And I won my first round. I lost every other game after that. But the thrill and the high, it made it like it didn't matter. And something that stuck with me is that I was relaxed the rest of my games. Knowing that people could be kind and courteous made me feel much more welcome at the space, enough that I could draw little portraits of my opponents. There's a reason why hamsters with art supplies were something I was so close to. And so, at the end of the tournament, the one thing that rolled in my mind like a hamster on the wheel was the kindness of the community that I was in.
That's beautiful. You know, I have to ask you, what inspired this story? Because, you know, cards, hamsters, what inspired this story? There were too many interesting things in here for me to even guess.
Yeah, I was thinking of interesting things that happened to me, and my family loves joking about it. You're always at that dang card shop, and I am. That's where my friends are. That's where my stories are.
Right.
So I said, I'd give a little nod to them. I hope they're listening right now.
Yeah, yeah. How'd you get interested in playing cards?
Yeah. In middle school, in high
school.
You played
cards in middle school? Poker? Would no. Okay, go ahead. No, okay.
All definitely like little anime card games. Cards with knights and hamsters instead of jacks and queens.
Mm-hmm.
After D&D, some people would play like Magic the Gathering, and I got really interested then. My friends were always introducing me to new card games.
Yeah. What's the one takeaway from this story? I was asking, you know, I remember I was asking Victor a lot of different lessons, but this one is a little more perplexing, and I'm curious what the takeaway is.
I have a lot of nervousness about being myself sometimes. So this story, both like in the telling, I'm telling about something I'm passionate about, and I think that's really important. And also, people are kinder than you think they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great perspective. You know, usually when I ask that question, most storytellers will talk about something embedded in the story, but you're talking about something equally as important. You're talking about the fact that, you know, it's something that I want you to listen to in terms of how I actually delivered it. And it was very passionate. And one of the words that I was thinking about was dramatic. It was really dramatized. What do you plan on doing with your communication degree?
I really hope that I get to do more things with my community. One of my passions, honestly, is I like working with kids and helping them figure out games and stuff, whether that's card, board games, or making up or making their own stories. So that's something I really want to do. Spread storytelling.
Yeah. So you would use games for teaching as a kind of a pedagogical technique. Okay. How do you feel about video games?
I think video games are a really good start because a lot of kids know them. Mm-hmm. Like it can be like community like builder.
Right. Good point. Okay. Well, Jessica Solis, we already heard about her daughter, and that tells you something about her because she's a great mom, a really wonderful person. And I think that she draws a lot of her storytelling skill set from that, you know, that compassion, that parental thing. And I think that's really important to hone in on. I'm curious what your daughter thought when she sat in on some of those classes.
Yeah, thanks for asking. You know,
if she didn't say anything nice, make it up. Okay.
No. She always had great positive things to say. She loved watching the class, hearing all the stories. And, you know, she was actually with me when you asked to share my story on the radio. And she exclaimed, "You're going to be famous."
That's right. And you are, because, you know, millions and millions and millions of people from every continent will be listening to this show. So if you're a nervous wreck, you ought to be, because this is probably not yet. Right.
Yeah,
actually, you've got a pretty good listener. You got a pretty good listener sponsorship and a pretty good listenership listening to this. So there's going to be less than a million, but more than 100. How's that? Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people who will be enjoying this. So your daughter isn't entirely wrong. You know, you could be sitting at a, you could be standing in a grocery store. It's happened to me like twice after all these years, speaking, and somebody will say, wait a minute. I know that voice. Where did I hear that voice? Right. And if you're lucky, your daughter will be there. You'll be able to sign your autograph. The world will change. You'll be on Jimmy Kimmel. It'll just be an entirely transformation of your life. Now, very few things are more challenging and interesting than meeting your future in-laws, right?
Right.
And, well, you know, your story is going to deal with that kind of perspective. Tell us your story. This is great.
Yeah, okay. So this story is from my father. Many years ago, I was trying to do what every typical teenager does on Saturdays, sleep in. My parents and aunt had no consideration for that, though. They were in the kitchen, which, mind you, is right outside my door. They were out there enjoying their coffee and laughing up a storm. I tossed and turned for about half an hour before I decided to just give up on sleeping and get up for the day. I must admit, I was grumpy and planned on sulking when I walked in there for my cup of coffee. But once I opened the door and got a closer listen, I realized they were sharing stories from the past. I stumbled in the kitchen and my dad says, Jessica, you're up. Perfect timing. Have a seat. You have to hear the story. You see, I had been dating your mom for about a month and a half now, and we decided it was time for me to meet your grandparents. One afternoon, I made my way over for dinner. Not knowing what to expect, I was on pins and needles. I really cared for your mom, and I wanted to make a good impression. As I stepped into the house, my heart started racing. I couldn't help but feel a wave of self-doubt wash over me. Thoughts like, am I good enough for their daughter? Will they accept me? Kept swirling around in my mind. I tried to hide my nerves with a smile, and I greeted your grandparents. But deep down, a battle of insecurities was taking place. I arrived before dinner was ready, but it wasn't a big deal. We all hung around the kitchen, getting to know each other. Everyone was helping to finish up dinner. Your grandpa turned to me and handed me a big bowl of dog food. He explained we feed the dog at the same time we eat, so he won't bother us. "Do you mind giving the dog some food?" he said. His name's Willie. Eager to help and make a good impression, I enthusiastically took the bowl and said, no problem. Walked out the back door and called out, "Hey, Willie, come get your food, boy," followed by a short whistle. Not even 2 seconds later, from around this corner, comes a massive black and white Great Dane, running as fast as he can straight towards me. I chunked that bowl down and got my tail end out of there as quickly as I could. I was immediately met with laughter. Your grandpa was bent over laughing up a storm. Straight away, the shock wore off and, you know, I was laughing with him. That moment really cemented my feelings that we were all supposed to unite and become a family.
Now, this story is, this brings up all kinds of great questions and really some great points. You know, it's been said that you never trust anyone your dog doesn't like. All right. So you can imagine what that means for marriage. You sure as hell don't want to marry anybody your dog doesn't like, right? That's one thing that comes to mind. But, you know, I said something in our class, and I want listeners to hear this too, because it's going to be somewhat controversial. And I just want people to think about it, because it really does come from the story. You know, love, I always talk about love coming from heart and not necessarily from your head, and meaning that, you know, you don't make a decision about marrying somebody based on, you know, will this person, does this person fit, you know, the ethnicity profile? Is this person the right age? And most importantly, meaning this is something I think we think about most is, you know, do my parents, will my parents like this person? Now, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to. With that last point, do my parents have to like this person I'm going to marry? What is your honest assessment about that? How do you feel about that?
Wow, that's being a mom. That is a kind of tough question.
Right, yeah.
I could see both sides of the coin. As a mother, I want to support my daughter and her choices. So I kind of don't think it's necessary if I like him. But if I think that he is maybe a little toxic, or it could be an abusive situation, then I think my opinion really does matter.
Yeah, I think that's a great qualifier. It really is. I mean, we don't necessarily want to interfere with our children's lives, but if we know that they're in a situation that is abusive, emotionally or physically, or I guess that's what you mean by a toxic situation as well, because that really is poisonous in every sense of the word. It becomes worse, it evolves. There isn't any way that you can get away from that. I do think it's our responsibility to say, look, you know, this isn't going to work. I'm not going to stop you. I can't stop you. I can't physically stop you. But you do need to understand what I see, right? And what I see isn't very good. That's a great point. You guys did a great job. Great job. I thought at first I was going to tell a story, but you know what? I don't want my stories. You guys were telling better ones. And I think it really is kudos to you about how you've come a really long way. I want everybody to know that telling stories during the holiday season is genuinely one of the best things you can do. It's one of the best gifts that you can give as well. So I want everyone to think about telling their stories, just family stories, your favorite folk tales, whatever you want to tell. Make sure that you do it over the holidays, because it really is one of the very best things that you could do. You guys have any final thoughts? Any final thoughts for anybody?
I would just like to jump in and say thank you for this opportunity. And I'm sure my classmates feel the same.
Well, it's my pleasure. It really is. You know, I don't think that students have enough of an opportunity to kind of showcase their skill or whatever they do. Every year, twice a year, I have shows where I have middle school students sharing their essays. And I also do a show, usually early summer, with a group of exchange students, which is also quite wonderful. But thank you for that, Jessica. I sure do appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you, Gisela Mendoza, Andrea Magual, Victor Galvin, Trey Worrell, and Jessica Solis for revealing a range of narrative conflict and really allowing us into your lives with your new cultivated skill. It's always been said that stories stretch the boundaries of the human heart, and I think that's exactly what you have done. Thank you. Don't anybody move, because Michael Woodson and Michael Clarkson is up next with Living Art, another KPFT exclusive. Make Houston's community station KPFT 90.1 a part of every day. Be sure to join us every Wednesday at 6 p.m. for So What's Your Story? Because if you keep loving a great story, well, we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to know and never forget that even if a story doesn't end happily, it doesn't mean that you can't live happily ever after. Peace.
If you like the sound of the music you hear on KPFT, make a sound investment. Become a member. It's quick, it's easy, and it's a good thing to do. 713-526-5738 is the number to call, or you can give online at kpft.org. And if you like the idea of ensuring KPFT's future success, why not set up an automatically renewing, sustaining membership? You can choose an amount that will renew automatically each year until you tell us otherwise. Give us a call at 713-526-5738 or visit us at kpft.org.
Make the connection between your favorite programs on KPFT and your power to keep them on the air. As a nonprofit organization, we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We count on listeners like you for donations, programming, and much of our staffing. That's how KPFT and Pacifica Radio work. Without listener support, 90.1 would be radio silence. Your contribution keeps the lights on, powers our transmitters, and covers our bandwidth. Becoming a member is quick, easy, tax-deductible, and secure. Just call or text GIVE to 713-526-5738 or go online to kpft.org. Become a member today and join the special group of heroes who keep KPFT on the air and free for everyone. You have the power. Connect to 526-5738 or go to kpft.org today.
It's 90.1 KPFT. Time to check in with the R&R show.
It has been all over TV for the last couple of weeks, and we've still got a couple of weeks to go.
Oh, God.
Yes, it's Ronnie Mus. We know that, born in a garage in Idlewood, and three dudes showed up. And
yeah, they did.
They were bearing cigars, whiskey, and
that's right.
And a bag of corn chips.
Yeah, exactly. Yep, it's truly been in all the papers and all over the internet.
Bucket of chicken. How about that?
A bucket of chicken from Dallas. Yes, and there was a Kentucky Fried Chicken on Lawndale, by the way.
I knew it.
There was a KFC. Anyway. See, this is, how can you miss this every day, Monday through Friday, from 1 until 3 o'clock?
You can grit your teeth and get through it.
This is Clint Broussard, and I'm inviting you to join me each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. Central Time for Blues and Hi-Fi. It's a deep dive into all shades of the blues, Gulf Coast radio that colors outside the lines. Catch us on our HD2 channel Fridays 2 to 4 p.m. as well, worldwide at kpft.org, and every Sunday 5 to 7 p.m. on 90.1 FM, KPFT, Houston.
You're listening to the original hipster, Harry Gibson, and
Mrs. Murphy couldn't sleep.
You're on the Soundbeat.
The nerves were slightly off the beat. Until she saw her problem with a can of Ovaltine.
Harry the Hipster Gibson was discovered by fellow pianist Fats Waller, and his frantic, inventive, stride, proto-rock blend would pave the way for players like Jerry Lee Lewis and Little Richard.
Who put the bands of dream in Mrs. Murphy's Ovaltine? She was ashamed, don't know who's to blame, 'cause the old lady didn't even get his name.
Club pianist by night, Juilliard graduate fellow by day, Gibson claimed to have coined the phrase hipster sometime in the 30s and would take it on as his own nickname soon after. Who Put the Benzedrine in Mrs. Murphy's Ovaltine was released by Musicraft in 1944. It's a little play on the Irish folk song Who Put the Overalls in Mrs. Murphy's Chowder, but that tune never got anyone blacklisted, which this one did for Gibson that year. He'd recover, but it would take time. Over a quarter century, actually, when he'd resurface in the 1970s playing blues rock. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Libraries. I'm Brett.